Welcome to There Is Hope, a program dedicated to getting those trapped in addiction on the road to recovery and living clean and sober lives. The opinions expressed on the following program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or advertisers of this station, and any advice or counsel given is provided for informational purposes only. Your host for There Is Hope, the most vulnerable talk show host on Seattle radio, Richard Dover.
Well, welcome to There Is Hope. We are a live talk show, and we discuss the topics of addiction and recovery. We want every listener to know you can live an overcoming life. Maybe you're a family member that has somebody that's an addiction. Your loved one can have an overcoming life. Well, tonight I'm excited to say that my wife Carmi is back on the show with me. She is on the air sometimes with us, and it's been a while. So, Carmi, I'm glad that you're here on the show.
For tonight, I'm happy to be back on air again, and I welcome you all, our radio listeners. And I want you to know, as the program says, there is hope. And probably you're listening tonight, you just tune in and you didn't know for what reasons, but God knows. And probably this is your time and God is telling you there is hope in whatever situation you are caught in right now. There is hope for you. Just trust and believe in God.
Well, tonight, Carmen and I are going to do something, and that's talk about the challenges and rewards of working with people who have addictions. Since we've been married, we've been over 6 years of being married. And during that 6 year period of being married, both of us have had our challenges and rewards of working with people with addictions. There's been challenges to our marriage at times. And then there's been the challenges of seeing people who make it and then they make bad choices and get back into drugs. But also there's the hope that those who have changed their life, turned their life around, and living a fruitful life and touching other people's lives. So we're going to be sharing the challenges and the rewards of working with those with addiction. But before we do that, we probably should let you know a little bit about our own ministry experiences. And we've shared on the air before that we some of our experience. In fact, I should mention that if you're listening, that you can listen to previous broadcasts. We call them podcasts. They're in the archives or our website. And our website address is thereishoperadio.org. That's thereishoperadio.org. And if you go there, you can click on the link there on archives. And then you can listen to podcasts from previous shows. And on that, you'll be able to hear more details about how Carmi and I met and also our ministry to those who have been involved in addictions. But just a kind of a short summary for myself personally, I've been working with addicts and people that have a variety of dysfunctions and the homeless and those who have been in prison and all kinds of different issues in their life. I've been doing that almost all of my Christian walk, so it's been almost over 20 years, in fact, of doing that. And I've worked with addicts in a variety of settings, from small groups to street ministry, jail and prison ministry. Spent time visiting individuals in various treatment centers. And now I'm the program director of Fairhaven House, which is a faith-based, low-income, clean and sober transitional housing discipleship program. That's a mouthful. So Fairhaven House is faith-based. You don't have to be a Christian to stay at the house, but we have faith-based principles that we apply. It's for those who have low incomes, and it's for those who want to be in a clean and sober place, and they want to be able to grow in the recovery. And so we've been doing that for almost a year now. And Carmi, what is it, some of your settings that you've been in helping people with addiction?
When I was still single, you know, before I got married, I was a manager of a transition house for women in Los Angeles. To be exact, it was the Sunset Boulevard, you know, in Hollywood area. So again, I was the manager of the transition house for women who were recovering from drug addiction, alcohol, there were prostitutes, you know, homelessness and battered women. Some had mental issues and, you know, all the kinds of stuff. So I was an in-house manager for about a year or more than a year probably. But before that, in a small setting way back in the Philippines when, you know, I was a Bible study leader, one of the leaders of the church, and I have my, you know, we have our home Bible study groups. And in my Bible studies, I had a couple of guys who were, you know, really alcoholics. So, so I had some experiences on, you know, going through and walking them through the journey of recovery.
But most of your experience has been actually married to me, right?
Oh, yeah. For the last 6 years, you know, I have been married, then I was involved in
a lot of great
programs.
Experiences and a lot of experiences you probably wonder about, huh?
Oh, yeah.
What a way to get married. Well, Carmen and I got married in 2004, and I want to say that we both have made many sacrifices to fulfill the call of God, to reach out to the addicts, the homeless, and the rejected of society. And the reality is that I think the sacrifices made has been more of Carmi making sacrifices than I have ever made. I'm kind of a guy that is wanting to live to the on the edge and push it to the extreme, and I've taken my wife probably on some journeys that she's wondered about if she ever signed up for such a journey. To share some of the things, one of the things is when we first got married. Now, I suggest not everybody do this. If you don't have the call of God in your life to work with people that can be very challenging, you don't have to follow our experience. But when we first got married, we lived in a studio apartment. That's all we could afford at the time. And we were living in the Capitol Hill area, which is an area of Seattle where there's a lot of drug addiction and homelessness and other things. And while we were there living in the studio apartment, we'd have homeless people come to get a shower, to eat, and even sleep in our studio apartment. I would think everybody listening knows what a studio apartment is. If you don't, a studio apartment means there's no bedroom. It means your living room, your dining room, your bedroom are all in the same place. And here we are having a homeless guy sleep on the couch and trying to get a little bit of peace from what's going on outside. And he's sleeping on the couch, and we had a little divider to separate our bedroom. And I think about it, and I feel pretty bad when I think about that now, of what Carmi had to go through at times. Man, you're crazy to be married to me, honey. You know that? I can't believe it. So, again, we've been very sacrificial in a lot of things that we've done. I can't tell you how many. Well, Carmi, what you talk about, what I was going to talk about is taking homeless people to the church. Or the Bible study, something. Why don't you share some of the experiences with that?
Oh, boy. At the top of my head, you mentioned about taking homeless guys to the church. You know, they haven't probably, you know, had showers for a week or I don't know how many days. And you can just imagine how they smell and haven't changed clothes for not only days, but weeks and weeks. And I would say, of course, the car is aircon. So I would say, can we turn off the aircon and just, you know, roll down, you know, the windows and, you know.
But we survived.
I survived, though, you know, going to church with them.
In the middle of winter, she'd have the windows rolled down at times.
Yeah.
And it was always interesting because we would have them in our house with the odor. We'd have them in the car with the odor. And so when we got to church, we always encouraged them to sit someplace else so we could get a little bit of breathing room. And it was kind of fun watching people. Our church, it's called Victory Life Center Church, and we've had people that have put up with a lot of things with their ministry, a lot of crazy stuff that has gone on. And, you know, I'm so thankful for our pastor who has a passion for the lost and a passion for the addicted. And he's actually started a church in the Capitol Hill area with people that were, I mean, we're talking about really messed up, and yet he saw many lives changed. But, you know, we've had to make the sacrifice of that. We've gone without sleep. I don't know how many times I've gotten phone calls in the middle of the night and have to drive someplace to see somebody to try to help them out. Finances, we've sacrificed in finances. I've used to make a very good pay. I've had high-paying jobs, always been in management positions, and getting involved in the ministry that we've been involved in. We just don't have the time to be able to be in a ministry and also do a full-time job, so we've had to sacrifice in finances. And we've even sacrificed with us as a couple, our private times, our precious time of finally getting to be able to get some peace of mind and then get interrupted by a phone call from somebody. So, Carmi, has it been hard?
Oh, yeah. Really hard and tough.
Can you share, you know, one of the times? You know, what we want to do is, as we're sharing here, we're sharing about, you know, the struggles, the challenges, the sacrifices we made. We want to talk about the sacrifices we made. And then we want to talk about why we're willing to do that, why we go through what we go through to do what we do because of, well, I don't want to give you the punchline. There's a reason why we do it. But before we share that, Carmi, do you have something that, think of one of the hardest times since we've been married, one of the hardest times for you?
I'll start with the latest one, probably.
There was two hard, probably.
But anyways, when you became the director of Fairhaven House, at that point when we started, we were not living yet. As of now, we're living in one of those discipleship houses. We're living in the basement. But before that, We were living like 30 minutes away from the discipleship houses. So I still can remember one time. We were very new. It was on our first week, probably, or in the second week of, you know, manning the house.
Yeah, I think it was just the first week. I mean, it was...
Probably first week.
I hadn't even met everybody yet. It was...
Yeah, you haven't met yet. Probably in the... to be exact, probably, I don't know, third day, fourth day. And there was really, really, I would say, a major issue that came up. You know, I don't know what troubles the guys made in the house. And so here we are at middle of the night. It was like probably about 12 o'clock, middle of the night. We're sound asleep, but, you know, the phone rang. And, of course, there was a big trouble in the house. And so Rich was called there to settle whatever issue it was.
It actually was a guy that had been in the house. If I remember right, he had been there less than a week, and he came in drunk and
made
had
troubles.
Alcohol in the room, and I got a phone call from his roommate, and so that's kind of, I think, the scenario, if I remember right.
Yeah, and I was scared for him. You know, we were 30 minutes, I said earlier, we were 30 minutes away from those houses. And so I was so scared. I said, honey, just don't go. You know, I didn't want him to go. At the same time, I said, can I go? Of course, I want to see, you know, if something happens, at least I know what's going on.
I have to interrupt you, honey. You never saw the guy. If you would have gone and saw the guy, I'm going to tell you, you'd have been more scared. So
that was good, though, that, you know, I didn't go. But I was just praying all the time, so much scared that, you know, who knows, I you know, what would happen to my husband. Because if you know the stories of these guys, you know, I haven't, you know, at that point, though, I haven't known any of the stories, but I could figure out some have, I don't know how many felony charges they have. Who knows what charges they have? They were in and out of jail. So, you know, I know, you know, they could be like scary, and, you know, it's really, really a risk, you know, risky task to do. But again, I just, you know, was praying all the time, and just I told him, just call me right away, whatever is, you know, going on over there. So that was really very hard on my part.
Yeah, and I'm sure that you question if we should even do them in it. You still question it.
Oh, until now, I still have.
We both do.
Because I said, probably, this is not the thing that I signed up for when I get married. I think we're going so, you know, too far. But, you know, this is the call of God, I believe, in our lives. So.
And I want to, I'm funny that you said that. You said it's the call of God in our lives. And that's what I was going to say is what I wanted to talk about, is why we're willing to sacrifice. Is it because we're such great people, wonderful people, such caring, loving people? Well, I've shared before in the broadcast, and I can share again, that without Christ, I'm not a loving person whatsoever. I was going to be a cop, a police officer, have a criminal justice degree, bachelor of science degree in criminal justice. I was going to lock everybody up and throw the key away. And so here we are, instead of throwing the key away on everybody, we're trying to find a key to get into their heart to be able to help them. And the reason we're able to sacrifice is because of the call of God. It's not because we're the greatest people in the world. We have issues in our marriage at times. We have issues with other people at times. We have not certainly arrived, but we have the call of God and our desires to be obedient to our Heavenly Father. And I, for me, over and over again, Jesus is the example I look at. Jesus was obedient to the call of going to the cross and dying for the sins of mankind. And if he's going to be beaten, mocked, I mean, he's the creator. He's the one who created us. And he's being mocked by his creation and beaten by his creation and then hung on a cross by his creation and taken on the sins of all of mankind. He was obedient to the call of the Father. And so I see Jesus as an example for Carmi and I to be faithful to the call of the Father for what he's called us to do. You know, I have to say that one of the reasons we can do it is because there's something the Lord told me when I was doing street ministry in the Seattle area, and working with the homeless, the addicted, the mentally ill, all the just the challenges that happen when you do street ministry, is that one of the things that the Lord showed me is that when you look at success, that you measure success not by how many people you reach or not even how their lives have been changed, but God sees success in how obedient you are to his will. And I've had to remind myself that over and over and over and over again, that the measure of success, again, is how obedient we are to his will. Is not how many lives have been changed. Is not how, you know, man, our ministry's grown this large. Is not by how much money comes into the ministry. If that was the measuring stick, man, we're not successful at all when it comes to how much money is coming to the ministry. It's not by the cars we drive. It is actually by if we're success, our success is measured by how obedient we are to his will. So that's the main reason why we sacrifice, is that reason there. And the other reason that we sacrifice is for the fact that the people that we work with are they many times would be called the rejects of society, that society has rejected them because of how they live, the choices they've made, that the things that they've done. And so out of it, what we've done is we've made a commitment to reach those that many will not reach. That the reality is many are not going to try to reach the people we reach, and there's some reasons for that. To be honest, addicts who are not in recovery, even addicts at times who are walking out the recovery, that they have issues in their life that become very challenging when you're trying to help them. To be honest, most addicts, like most people, are self-centered. I think most people have a degree of self-centeredness. I know I certainly do. And so addicts are self-centered. Many times they're not grateful. They're dishonest. They're untrustworthy. And here's one of the things that's probably the hardest thing at all, that at times they'll stab you in the back. You do everything you can to help them. You sacrifice for them. And then if it's to their benefit, they'll stab you right in the back. And so who wants to help those kind of people? You know, to be honest, most people don't want to do that because, again, of the challenge that is there. I'll have to say that I know many Christians and even strong Christians at times don't want to reach those people. And so we have made a choice to go ahead and reach those who people not wanted to reach. I notice we have a caller on the line. If you just listen one moment here, I just want to share one more thing. And that's the last thing is I want to say the reason we do what we do is because there's hope. The number one reason why Carmi and I do what we do to sacrifice for addicts is because there's hope. There are those who do come out of addiction. There are those whose lives are totally transformed. And there are those that do make it. And that's what we focus on is those who make it instead of those that don't. And so I have Kenny on the line. And Kenny is from Seattle. And what did you want to share, Kenny?
Well, there's a couple of things I want to talk about. I think the first thing is, if you look across the country, the churches that grow the most, they certainly aren't doing what you're doing. I think that, you know, you can disagree or agree, I don't know, but churches that really care for the poor and get down in the gutter and reach out to the people that are really kind of unlovely to love, their numbers seem to be 70, 80, 90 people at the most. And then you find churches that are 2, 3, 4,000, 10,000 people. There seems to be this health, wealth, and prosperity gospel that appeals to the masses. Which one is it?
Yeah, and what it's interesting you say that. Now there are, I mean, there's larger ministries that do have. I mean, one of the largest ministries is in Dream Center in Los Angeles, and obviously they're, you know, a larger church and have a lot of finances, and they're doing a whole lot. I don't know if you're familiar with them or not, but they're the exception. They're the real exception right to the rule. And what's happened is they've made a lot of sacrifices to do what they do. An interesting thing, the Dream Center is actually in an old hospital, which is where I was born. So that was kind of interesting, is the hospital I was born at is now a ministry center. But you're absolutely right. It is normally they're smaller. Honestly, one of the challenges for them is always finances, because the people you're reaching out to, they don't have the funds, and you're not telling them, give me more money and you'll be prosperous.
I guess what I'm asking, though, is why aren't the people that have the money, why isn't their heart bent towards those that don't?
You know what? That's a good question. I'm going to cover that actually towards the end of the show. I'm going to talk about, you know, some of the needs that we have, and I'm going to bring a challenge to those who are listening who do have the finances. I guess that would be that's a good question. I guess we'll put out to the audience. Maybe we'll get some callers on this one.
Do you think it's important for the lead pastors to actually have a heart for the poor rather than just, you know, I don't know.
I think that's one of the keys.
I don't see what you're doing. I don't see that being the heartbeat of most of the churches, at least in our city or around, you know, from what I see on TV. You know,
right.
Turn on TBN or any type of Christian television. I don't see that very much.
Yeah, well, I think one of the reasons that is, like I shared just before you came on the radio here, is one of the reasons because it's very burdensome. And I think that I'll say Americans specifically, I think Americans have a real problem, and I'll say even more specific American Christians, is that a lot of American Christians are I'm going to get in some trouble here. This is not what I really want to talk about, they're materialistic. And so there's a part that they're more concerned about their lattes than they are a homeless person. And You know, and I think another thing.
Don't you think we have a disdain for the poor?
Well, I think to the poor, to the gutter drunk, to the homeless. You know, they're a detriment to society.
What about the single mom? You know, with no fault of her own, she marries a guy that just, you know, totally goes sideways, and all of a sudden she's got one or two kids, and she's all by herself, and she's looked down at the church and totally disregarded.
Well, you know, and that happens, and she looks for help, and it's hard for her to get help. And, you know, I think at the same time, we need to not be too negative, because there are churches that are doing it. They are reaching out. And,
Which ones?
One of them is my own, you know. Our church is very committed.
Okay, and yours is a church of what? How many people?
Well, you know, we're about 125, 150.
Okay, so how many churches of 2,000 or 3,000 people, or 4,000 or 5,000, actually really minister to those people?
Well, again, you know, there's some I know that do. There's some that have women's resource centers they finance. Well, I know that, I'll tell you one church that in the local area, that even though they have what I call a lot of Eastsiders and stuff, and that's Cedar Park Church. I mean, they're a great church.
Cedar Park, agreed, 100%.
Yeah,
Cedar Park is awesome.
You know, Cedar Park is one of those examples. You know, I don't want to get into naming all the different churches and everything else, but you know, one reason I wanted to pick Cedar Park is because, you know, they have a counseling program, they have recovery programs. I thought of the single mom. Man, they have a lot of things they're trying to do to help the single mom, and so, you know, there are some larger churches there, but they are far in between. And you know, and I think that part of it is that, again, the call of the pastor to get the message out. You know, for myself, I didn't really have – I had a burden for the jail ministry and stuff. But for me, it was going in Capitol Hill in the Seattle area on a Friday night, taking some youth with families that, you know, were never exposed to the streets of Seattle, and going out there and seeing guys eat out of a garbage can, to look at people shooting up, dealing with drugs, just to look at – the devastation, the mentally ill. And I walked down that street on a Friday night when there were probably, I would say, six ministries that night. And I said, just crying out to God, where are the Christians? Now, there's six ministries out there, but the need was greater than those six ministries could ever do. And I says, where are the Christians? And I have to tell you, for me personally, is that God spoke to me, don't worry about them, where are you? And that's where God gave me the call to street ministry full-time. That's where he gave me the call to really work for those that we're talking about. And so I think sometimes it's just called, you know, exposure. A person has to be exposed to the situation, and once they're exposed to it.
Maybe a cool thing would be for you to get a hold of all these senior pastors and take them with you down to the streets.
That would be a great idea. It would be a great idea to get some out there and to really take a look. And here's the thing I've always been able to keep at peace with all of this and not get negative and discouraged is the only thing I'm responsible is for the call of God in my life. I'm not responsible for the senior pastors calling on their church. At the same time, I can share the message. You know, here's our next goal. Our goal is really we want to get into the churches. You know, we need to raise funds for Fairhaven House. We need to raise funds to be on the air still. And our goal is to be able to just to get into some churches and share the vision, share the need, share what's out there. And because there is one thing, I don't expect people to do what we're doing. Honestly, I think very few would do what we're doing. I think maybe only a few are called. But the finances, again, is that's where people can help and they can give other finances. And what people need to realize is they give $5, $10, $15 to a ministry like what we're doing, is that goes a long way when you have a few people just get given and on a consistent basis. And so, you know, that's what I hope, is that people maybe not do what we do, but they still can give. But we need to get to a break. And so I thank you very much for Kenny for calling and putting that challenge out there.
Time to take a break. We'll be back with more There Is Hope with Richard Dover.
So welcome back to There Is Hope. I wanted to have Carmi to share. You know, the reason we say that we do what we do is because of changed lives. That's the driving force behind what we do, is because of lives being changed. The reality is only a few lives are going to be changed. I heard one statistic that out of 100 people, that only 3%, 100 addicts, whatever the addiction is, only 3% ever truly get set free. Well, we focus not on the 97%, we focus on the 3%, because I believe one person is worth it. One changed life can make a difference. So I want Carmi to be thinking about here. I'm going to set you up, Carmi, to be thinking about a story of someone that you can think of, that a life that was changed, that you know beyond a shadow of a doubt that their life was changed in a dramatic way. And while you're thinking about that, I wanted just to say one thing, and that is to put in a plug in for our church. And again, you know, I think there's other churches besides what our church is doing, but Victory Life Center is the church that we go to. You just heard a radio spot about it. And I think that one of the unique things about Victory Life Center, why it's a church that is open, I say our church, I'm not the pastor there, I'm just a member there. I was the outreach pastor for some time, but I resigned from that as I've taken on more responsibilities with Fairhaven House and this radio ministry. But one of the reasons I believe in our church is a church that's a great church in the area, not because I think it's necessarily the best church, has it all figured out, it's made up of people, and if it's made up of people, it's going to fall short at times. But we believe in the power of Jesus Christ to set people free. We believe that Jesus is the higher power. He's the only higher power. And, you know, we have people come on the show that say God is their higher power, or they have other sources. And if that's helping them, that's fine. But I believe the true power is Jesus Christ, and that Jesus Christ does deliver individuals and sets people free. And as I think of that, Carmi, can you think of a story of that you know that it was Jesus that set somebody free? And this is not to say that AA, Celebrate Recovery, all these other programs aren't good. I believe there's some great things in them, and I absolutely believe in the 12 steps, but ultimately believe Jesus is that higher power and can set people free. And he does that in a variety of ways. Sometimes it's dramatically, instantaneously, and sometimes it's over time. But can you think of a story, kind of a dramatic story of somebody's life that was changed that gives the reason why you have hope?
Based on my experience in the Philippines, again, as I mentioned earlier, I had a home Bible study group, and I had one gentleman, his name was Freddy, and this is a guy who was totally, completely delivered from alcohol, from a gutter drunk. God has turned his, you know, life upside down completely, and it was no other help, no AAs, because in the Philippines, I didn't know at this point if we have these AA meetings and all kinds of stuff, but at that time, I never knew there was a thing that existed called AA. But what we knew was that the only power, the only thing, or, you know, it was only God that can totally heal and deliver or set free, you know, people from drugs or alcohol or whatever issues in life. So his name was Freddie, and he was a gutter drunk, literally. Almost probably every day, he was always drunk. Every night he comes home, he was drunk. But I worked with him. It was a big sacrifice on my part. He was a member of my Bible study group, and I knew at that point that God wanted to use me to transform this person's life. And so I was just, again, obedient to that call. And in a few months, I don't know, 2 or 3 months later, from a gutter drunk, in just an instant, God healed and delivered him. And in fact, he's a pastor now. He became he was greatly involved in mostly in jail ministries. He went, he had Bible studies in many jails in the Philippines, because he said that if he was not, you know, delivered or set free, he would have been in jail, incarcerated, or you know, 6 feet below the ground. So as a sign of his gratefulness of how God delivered him, he just went on for ministry, you know, and catered, you know, to the drug addicts and the alcoholics also.
And with Freddie, he has such appreciation for you. I know at various times you've talked to him on the phone, and that was how many years ago? It has to have been over 6 years ago.
Probably 10 years ago.
10 years ago. He's still clean and sober. He's called up a couple of times.
He's a pastor.
And he's an evangelist, too.
He is an evangelist. He just goes to different places and conducts, you know, crusades. And he has, I am proud to say that he has led hundreds and hundreds of people to the Lord, and he just allowed God again to use him for the conversion of those addicts and alcoholics.
And you said gutter drunk in the sense that he was absolutely hooked to alcohol because he didn't live in the gutter. He had a home, but his life would have been ultimately to live in the gutter if things hadn't changed, right?
Oh yeah, because actually I picked him up also in like a gutter. It was a ditch.
Oh, really? So he really was in the ditch. Even though he had a home, he liked spending time in the ditch,
yeah.
Huh?
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
I've known a few guys that have a home, but it seems like they like the ditch more than they like the home. So
yeah, he you could find him in ditches, you know, because he didn't know, you know, when he was drunk. So he literally didn't know where he was.
And thinking about that story, and again, that's I mean, we have several other stories. We'll see how much time we have to share some of the others to share why we do what we do, because, again, it's a changed life. And like I said earlier, one life can make the difference. And here's the reality. One life change can affect a community. It can affect a family. It can affect a nation. I mean, there are nations, especially not so much here in the U.S., because I don't think we believe in the power of God like other countries do at times. But there are nations literally where the president or the leader of that nation was a gutter drunk that turned around, accepted Christ into their life. God dramatically changed their life, and now they're leading out as godly men in a nation. That's the power of God to change a person's life. And yet they would be the unwanted, the rejected. Those in society that nobody wants anything to do with that got passed by. You know, there's a story of a gentleman in the Bible that was lame. And he was in front of the temple, and he'd beg every week. Every time the people would come to church on the Sabbath, he would be begging. And how many times did people walk by him? They're going to church, and they're bumping over him. They probably say, get out of the way. I'm trying to get into church. I think that would happen here in America in many places, is that people just shove somebody out of the way as they're trying to get into church. And then you have the apostles walk up, and he's begging, and they said, money they don't have, but such as this we have, rise up in the name of Jesus and walk. And they grabbed hold of that man's hand and lifted him up, and he started walking. A man who was crippled all his life has started walking. Somebody chose to not just pass by him. And then he goes into the temple, and he shares of the power of God that healed his body. How many lives were changed by that man's transformation? Now, that was a physical transformation, healing to his body. Well, I'll tell you what, working with those we work with, I believe that a lot of times it's a lot harder for somebody who's addicted to be healed from their addiction than somebody who has cancer. And yet, God heals both. But we're going to take a break, but before we do that, I have a song I want to play for you. And this song is for those, maybe you're a Freddy out there. You're listening, and you're an alcoholic or addict who has the call of God in your life. You know that God has called you to reach out to touch other people's life. Maybe you have a passion to make a difference in this world, but you're caught up into an addiction. You've been in rebellion to God. You've been holding back in what he has for you, and you've allowed the addiction to get in the way of the call of God in your life. I want to encourage you to listen to this song, and may it speak to you to turn your life around. So pay attention closely to the words of this song. Maybe it's speaking to you.
I've been here before. Now here I am again, standing at the door, praying you'll let me back in. So label me a prodigal would be only scratching surface of who I've been known to be. Turn me around, pick me up, undo what I've become. Bring me back to the place of forgiveness and grace. I need you, I need your help. I can't do this myself. You're the only.
More There Is Hope coming up with host Richard Dover.
Well, welcome back to There Is Hope. Well, before the break, I played a song about turning your life around and allowing God to take over, to take control. And I just want to share with you before we go any further in the broadcast that if you're struggling with an addiction and you know Jesus and you want him to be the Lord of your life, but you've allowed your addiction to be the Lord of your life, I want you to know there is hope. Your life can be turned around. Carmi shared a story of a gentleman whose life was turned around. And I'm going to be sharing a few stories in the few minutes that we have about some men whose lives have been turned around. I don't know how far we'll get with it, but we'll share a few of those. I want you to know that we do have Fairhaven House, and Fairhaven House is a safe place to live. It's a place where you can live where it's truly a clean and sober house, and it can really be of help to you. And Carmi, you know what, as I'm talking about Fairhaven House, before I share some stories, why don't you share something positive about either the house or the guy, something there that you can think of that maybe somebody's listening and wondering if that may be a place for them. Why don't you share? I mean, we got a house. When we have our houses full, we have two houses, and we have about 18 guys that are coming from addictions. We have guys that have committed arson at one point in time. We have guys that have DUIs that you can't believe. They have all kinds of history, drug addiction charges, everything else that you can think of. That's kind of how they've lived their life, but they've turned their life around. But can you think of something positive in the midst of that?
You know, at the outset, you can say that living or working with these types of people can be scary. It can be risky. You know, you don't know what will happen because of, you know, the lifestyles that they have had. But, you know, overall, I can say that there are also positive stuff, you know, positive things about them. One of the things is I enjoyed, you know, in the house is that we have a garden. We have a vegetable garden. And, you know,
it's been very challenging this year.
Oh, yeah. So as early as April, you know, we cleaned out the garden, you know, have vegetables in front of the house. And, you know, guys just, you know, making turns in just cleaning up, you know, tilling the soil, using the roller tiller and, you know, weeding out and then putting fertilizers and even helping, you know, plant, you know, whatever vegetables we wanted and, you know, watering the vegetables, you know, in days that they need to be watered. Yeah, it was fun. It's really nice when you're able to establish good rapport with them. And yeah, it's cool. And I just go up and, you know, the thing is sometimes I didn't have salt. We don't use salt in the house. So I would say, hey, guys, you know, can you send, you know, can you give me, you know, salt? I don't have any salt or whatever, you know. So it's really cool. And we have, you know, they're really respectful of us and they respect us a lot. And, you know, yeah. So
okay, now we don't want to give too much hope because we are dealing with addicts and you know, at times it can be very challenging still. Not that guys are perfect, so I want anybody to think, oh, I got the perfect house I'll be at, because it can't be perfect because I'm the program director. So right off the bat, we have problems with me being the program director since I'm not perfect. But, you know, honestly, you know, we have some great guys. We have some guys that are challenged. I mean, I had to deal with something today, very challenging, very, very challenging. One thing I don't like is lying. So I want to encourage you, if you are looking at moving the house, don't be a liar and move in. We'll have conflict because I can't deal with lying because I can't help somebody that lies. But, you know, we have the challenges. But we have some great guys. And, you know, I've thought about it. They've showed, Carmi and I, we live in the basement, and they've shown us so much respect. I'm shocked because when we were in Capitol Hill doing ministry, we didn't get a lot of respect a lot of the times. They'd bug us all the time in the end. And they had to buzz to get us. They couldn't come into our apartment complex without buzzing, and they'd bug us. And they want money, and we don't give out money and everything else. But these guys overall have been great. And so if you're thinking of a clean and sober house, maybe that's the place for you. And I want to say also that we need your help. As Kenny said earlier, why isn't it that more individuals don't do what we're doing? Why isn't it that the larger churches don't get involved? And I know a lot of larger churches that do get involved. But when you look at all the money rolling through some of those churches, I'll be honest, when a pastor's driving five cars and has a 10-car garage, then I have a little bit of problem when it comes to how they use their money. But, you know, we have, again, only a few minutes here, but I want to talk about some stories, you know, and I'm going to talk about a couple of guys in the house since we were talking about the house. And, man, there's so many stories we could share. We could share all the negative stuff. And, there again, honestly, there is a whole lot more negative than positive. There absolutely is tons more negative than positive in this kind of ministry. But we know that. We know that coming into it. And we may grumble with each other at times. Do we ever grumble about it, Carmi?
Oh, yeah.
Do we ever complain about it? Oh, boy. Yeah, we sure do. And now when we're looking at October, suddenly being responsible for all the finances and everything else with the ministry and not knowing where it's going to come from, we're saying, God, help us. And it can be something that we really could stress out at, but we just give our hands up and throw it to God and say, you know what, if you want this ministry to continue, if you want this radio show to continue, you have to work it out. But, you know, I want to talk about a guy that we had on the radio. If you didn't listen, a couple of weeks ago, we had Mark on the radio. He actually lives in the house that we live at. Mark literally was a gutter drunk. Mark shared on the radio, so I'm not sharing anything he wouldn't share. He did not take a bath a shower for a year, if you can believe that. Now, I'm sure glad we didn't have to pick him up and take him to church as we talked about taking people to church. And yet Mark went into treatment. He was in long-term treatment in one of the treatment centers, and Mark's been living in the house. I don't know how long he's been living there. He's probably been living there 6-8 months. I don't know now, 6 months at least. He is doing fantastic. In fact, he is the manager. He's now the manager of the house that we live at. And so, you know, here's a gentleman that society say there was no hope for him, and yet, look, he's managing a house now to help other guys out. And he is a gentleman that has just a sweet spirit and a great guy. And honestly, I'll share it on the radio here. You'll see a picture of him on our website. You go to thereishoperadio.org. That's thereishoperadio.org. You'll see Mark. He has a big, long beard. Big, long beard. If you saw him, you say, oh, I've seen one of those guys out in the street before. And how many times do we judge people? We see that beard and say, oh, that guy must be homeless. He must be this or that. And yet he's managing a clean and sober house. So be careful when you're judging there. You know, so Mark's a life that's been changed. We didn't have an input really with his life being changed until he came into the house, but we've been able to help him to create an environment for him to be sober. So, you know, we're happy for that.